We're joined now by an MLB Network insider, a Sports Illustrated senior writer, a three-time National Sports Writer of the Year, a two-time Emmy Award winner, a New York Times best-selling author. He is going to be on the call for Angels Red Sox tomorrow on MLB Network, and then Red Sox Yankees Saturday on Fox. So he's got a very busy week. Tom Verducci is my guest. Tom, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Great, Jim. How are you?
Tom, I'm great. It's great to visit with you. Let me start first with the fact that you will be on the call of the Angels Red Sox tomorrow night in Boston, which means, Tom, you're going to see Mike Trout, who is currently top two in the AL in home runs, runs, walks, slugging percentage, and OPS. I mean, I feel like you and I have this conversation every single year about how amazing this guy is, and then he gets better. So what exactly are we witnessing this season from Trout?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He is getting better, and I think this year it's easy to see defensively how much he's gotten better. I mean, it's possible he's going to win a Gold Glove. And not that it was a knock on him before, but early on he wasn't a great throwing arm. He certainly conquered that. So I think you're looking at a guy in his physical prime, right? 26 years old, traditionally as you get into your late 20s, that's the physical prime for a baseball player. And now he's got the wisdom of 1,000 games in the big leagues. So the most amazing thing to me, Jim, he always came up, even as a 19-year-old, with an incredible idea of what the strike zone was. You know, so much of the game now is getting hitters to chase that pitch slightly off the outside part of the plate. And ever since he was 19, Mike Trout was spitting on those pitches. And he's even better now, if you can believe it, leading the major leagues in walks. So you can't get him outside of the zone. And to get him out in the zone, good luck with that. Because, you know, he hits the high fastball now, which he didn't early in his career. You know, this is a guy who just loves baseball. I know it's corny to say that, but if you watch Mike before a game, he's signing autographs, he's playing with fans. You watch him during a game, he's always having a good time, right? So you're talking about somebody who just loves his craft, has incredible physical skills. It's just all coming together now in a physical prime. I mean, I hope people, you know, you mentioned this, but, you know, Mike's only been in the playoffs once. They got swept by Kansas City. I hope people realize what we got here. I mean, I know he hasn't had the national stage in the postseason too much, but, I mean, this is the Mickey Mantle of our generation.
Tom Verducci joining us. It's so well said. You know, I wonder, Tom, has he reached that LeBron James, Michael Jordan level where he could be the MVP every single season that he plays, but people just get used to his greatness and they start to look elsewhere?
I do. I think probably Barry Bonds was a victim of that a little bit when he was playing. He won 7, but you make an argument he could have won a couple of more because people were like, well, let's give it to somebody else, even if subliminally you start thinking that way. Listen, I know it's not the same as a quarterback in football or LeBron in basketball where one guy can really change the fortunes of a team. I mean, Mike's proven that by not, you know, getting out of the first round. But I do think if you put Mike on just about any team, that team would at least be competitive. And, I mean, he is keeping the Angels' heads above water here by himself pretty much. So, he is, to me, as much as a baseball player can impact a game or the standings, Mike Trout's doing that.
All right, so bottom line, if he's doing all this, and as you point out, he's entering his physical prime, he's only 26, and we know the guy's gotten so much more experience, he's so wise. I mean, theoretically, how much better can he still get?
Great question. I mean, it's hard to say he's going to get better than this. I mean, he's running a little bit more this year on the bases. He was thrown out once, which is like, you know, stop the presses. Mike Trout got thrown out stealing because right. I feel like he can take a bag like any time that he wants. We tend to overlook that. I think there's more in the power department. As I said, though, pitchers really don't give in to him much at all. And without great protection in the lineup, I'm afraid that, you know, the 50-plus homer season might not happen because he's going to be a 150-walk guy. I think if you put him in a deeper lineup, then, yeah, Mike Trout's a 50-plus home run guy.
We're talking to Tom Verducci. All right, now, he's not the only one in the Angels-Red Sox series, Tom, who's putting up huge numbers. You've got J.D. Martinez. He leads the majors, hitting .325. Well, leads the majors in RBI. Hitting .325, tied with Trout for the lead in home runs. And the thinking's always been that it does take time for guys to adjust to Boston, but he hasn't had that issue at all. What has impressed you the most about what he's done with the Red Sox so far?
Well, what impressed me was the other day, Alex Cora, the manager, told me, this is JD's team. I mean, think about that. The guy basically just got there. I think what Alex meant was that, you know, Mookie Betts, obviously, I mean, he's one of the best all-around players in the game. He's having an unbelievable season, but he's more of a quiet type of guy. And not that JD is the kind of guy to hold a clubhouse meeting, but what he is he's like the biggest hitting wonk in baseball, right? I mean, he knows so much about hitting, just the mechanics of the swing, the way pitchers are trying to work different hitters. He loves to impart that knowledge. I'm talking about even during games on the other players on the team. So now his voice is rising in that clubhouse. I really thought the problem with the Red Sox last year, and they were good last year, but I thought they still hadn't gotten around to replacing David Ortiz. Not so much about the left-handed bat, but about the dominant alpha male in the clubhouse. And not that JD is anything like Poppy's personality. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about the center of the team, the fulcrum of the lineup, everything revolving around him. That is JD Martinez. I mean, again, not an outgoing personality, but I think just the guy, people just dig the way he goes about the game and how hard he works. And that has an effect on, I've seen it. You know, a guy like Rafael Devers, JD Martinez helped change his setup and swing. That's the kind of impact. When you talk about a baseball player who can make those around him better, that's JD Martinez.
Tom Verducci is my guest. All right, then over the weekend, you've got the Red Sox Yankees, and we're almost at the midway point of the season, and they're separated by a half a game. So, Tom, when you look at Boston and you look at New York, how do they stack up against each other in your mind?
Yeah, it's interesting because these head-to-head games, listen, they're always, you know, like a war within a war of the season. I think they're kind of even more important because you want to stay out of that wild card game, right? And one of these teams is going to win more than 100 games and have to put their season on the line in a win-or-go-home game. So head-to-head matchups are going to be huge. They always are, again, but especially this year. So, you know, matching them up head-to-head, you know, obviously to me the Yankees have a deeper bullpen. The ball's almost never in play, even. Forget about scoring runs when you face that Yankee bullpen. So I give the Yankees an edge there. Red Sox have the edge in the first, say, five, six innings of the game. But most of those games, I believe, tend to get decided by bullpen. So I'd give the Yankees a slight edge on Boston.
All right, then. How do both Boston and New York then compare to the Astros?
Yeah, again, I think the Astros are a team that can beat you with any one of four starting pitchers in the series. And I don't think any one of those other teams can tell you that. You know, I still think Houston has to figure out, you know, who's going to get the last six outs of the game, especially the last three. Is it one of the starters goes to the pen? Is Ken Giles come around? I don't know the answer to that. Houston doesn't know the answer to that yet. But you know, you got to say, for me, Houston is still the team to beat in the American League. I mean, not just because they were world champions last year, but, you know, they have the highest run differential in baseball. They just absolutely destroy the bottom half of the league. And they've had the kind of power pitching to match up against any offense. That's the one Achilles with the Yankees' offense, as great as it is. They need to hit home runs to win games. And the Astros, just with those starting pitchers, just tend to rack up 12 strikeouts every time they play the Yankees. So you only have 15 balls in play when the Astros match up against New York. So, yeah, all due respect to Houston. And listen, I love Boston, I love New York, but I'll give the Astros the edge still.
I would too. And speaking of that, I got to ask you about Justin Verlander because you sat down with him a little while back. We're talking about a guy who had surgery on his core before the 2014 season. Then he went on to have an ERA that was just north of 4.5. He led the league in earned runs allowed. I mean, at that point, it would have been easy to think that that was the beginning of the end. But clearly, that's not the case. So what changed?
Well, first of all, he goes to Houston, right? And then he's getting not just more run support, but I think he's been re-energized there. And I know this, leaving Detroit, which is a little bit behind the rest of the curve in terms of what they have available to players in terms of analytics and even hardware. Just a quick example, Jim. When Verlander got to Houston, they have these super high-speed slow-motion cameras. And when you have a bullpen session, they'll film those. And Justin noticed the way his slider came off his fingers when you slow it down frame by frame. It wasn't quite coming out the way that he wanted, and he was able to readjust the way the ball came off of his fingers. I mean, literally, like the last little digits coming off the digit of the finger. They didn't have anything like that in Detroit. I mean, you watch Justin before a start in Houston now, and he's sitting at a big table with all kinds of spreadsheets poured out in front of him. They didn't have that in Detroit. And I think he's gotten that religion. I think he really enjoys diving into that kind of stuff now. So I think there are some tangible reasons why he's better. Start with what you said. He had that core surgery. It wasn't really right even for a year and a half after he came back. And that's a tough surgery for a pitcher to come back from. So you combine the health with some of the things the Astros have available for him and the offense behind him. You can make a case he's throwing the ball as well now as he ever has. And that's a mouthful for a guy who was a Cy Young winner in his 20s.
That's an amazing statement, actually. Tom, before you go, I've got to ask you also, you made the point the other day, and I quote, "The Mets have made many dumb moves in recent years, but even entertaining the idea of trading Jacob DeGrom and or Noah Syndergaard would plumb new depths to their foolishness," end quote. I mean, knowing that, and I don't see how you argue that point, why is there even a conversation about possibly moving either one or both of them?
I guess that's the world we live in now. Everybody wants to start trade rumors early. And, you know, Sandy Alderson basically said, listen, you want to give me your top 20 prospects for Jacob DeGrom, then we can talk. My point, Jim, about that is the minute you trade somebody like that, that's exactly what you're looking for. And as much, you know, there's a whole culture now in hyping prospects, right? Whenever there's a deal, you want to know, hey, is that a top 10 prospect of that team's organization? You know, go and look at Yoan Moncada, you know, in the Chris Sale deal. You know, go back and read what everybody wrote about him as a prospect. And I'm not saying he's a bust. I'm just saying prospects take time to develop, and there are no guarantees. And Moncada's a guy after 500 plate appearances, doesn't even get on base 30% of the time. And people are doing backflips because he was the top-rated prospect in baseball. There are no guarantees, but Jacob DeGrom right now is a guarantee. You know, the Mets are as good as anybody in baseball when he gets the ball. You know, you can't pitch every day for the Mets, but every fifth day, they can beat anybody. So, yeah, I think it's crazy to entertain the thought of even trading those two guys. It doesn't mean you don't listen, but for all his fans who are enamored with somebody else's prospects, think you're going to get four studs for Jacob DeGrom, you got to show me when that worked out for somebody because I can't find it.
It's another busy week for Tom Verducci. He's on the call for the Angels-Red Sox tomorrow. It's on the MLB Network and then Red Sox-Yankees Saturday on Fox. Tom, much respect. Always good to have you on the show. Thank you very much for it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
Great job, Tom. Thank you. Tom Verducci, MLB Network insider, also on Fox. Three-time National Sports Writer of the Year, two-time Emmy Award winner, New York Times best-selling author. He's got a really good resume. Great conversation. Nobody better. Tom Verducci.